The views and opinions expressed on the following program are those of the host and may not necessarily be the views or opinions of this station, its management, sponsors, or staff. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to the Mitch Hanks Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on The Mitch Hanks Show.
This is Phil Blackwell sitting in for Mitch Hanks today. Mitch is with his parents down in Lafayette, Indiana. He'll be back tomorrow. In this hour, we are talking with Pastor Stephen Marsh, and the issue at the heart of our discussion will be about racial issues in Madison. This is front page, of course, as we're coming up to the first anniversary of the killing of Tony Robinson. But there are all sorts of issues related to public education, to housing, to incarceration, to jobs. And Stephen is one of two pastors at the Lake Edge Lutheran Church. And is also a writer for the Lutheran Magazine and a writer for Rooted in the Gospel and African American Spiritual Experience. So, Stephen, what should we know about you now that you're at this church in Madison, because your background has you coming from Chicago area and the Northwestern University and other places? What has formed you so that now you're here in Madison doing ministry?
Thank you, Phil. First of all, it's good to be here this morning. Thank you for inviting me. To make sure that people know, I am a fairly recent person to come into Madison. I've been here for about 5 years now as the pastor of the Lake Edge Lutheran Church, actually as the co-pastor of the Lake Edge Lutheran Church on the east side of Madison. I co-pastor that congregation now with Pastor Katya Ushakoff. She's been there for a little over a year. I've been there for about 5 years. It is a place that is about 95% white, and it's a place that I never expected to be. My 32-year ministerial career has mostly been in African-American settings, and my passion has been for the uplift of African-American congregations in the Lutheran communion in particular, as well as in all communions in general. But one of the things that you learn in the ministry is to never say never, because when God has a plan, then God institutes God's plan. So I ended up here in Madison, pastoring a white congregation, and it's a very progressive-minded congregation, a very liberal congregation. They were ready for a change, and we have gotten together to do some things that I'm not sure that many other congregations in Madison are doing.
I would suspect that your experience at Northwestern University, Bachelor of Arts in Philosophy and Political Science, and then going to a Lutheran Seminary in Columbus, Ohio, sort of gave you an edge on how to live in the midst of a mixed population, being able to span different borders that somehow seem to be set. But tell me, you also had a theological school in Tanzania. What was that like?
It was very good to be in the motherland, to be learning theology through an African lens. It was ironic that I would be there, because I went to Trinity Lutheran Seminary, which, and I think I was one of two black people in my graduating class. But I got the opportunity to go to a Lutheran seminary in Arusha, Tanzania. It was good to be in what I call the motherland. It was good to learn theology through an African lens. It was good to see that the setting of many places in Africa is just like the setting of many of the places that we read about in scripture, since the scripture did take place on the African continent. And so it was a very good experience, a very good cultural experience for me.
I'm going to remind you of the number to call in at 210-1667 to talk with Pastor Stephen Marsh. Given your background of being in Chicago and in Columbus, Ohio, in Tanzania, in Queens, in Brooklyn, and in Detroit. What is definitive about Madison? What defines this town? Somewhat around issues of race, but just in mm-hmm. other general issues. What's distinctive about Madison?
Again, I come to this as a relative newcomer, but I actually, even though I grew up in Chicago 2.5 hours away, I really did not know where Madison was before I got here. What I had heard about Madison is that it was a wonderful place to live. It had fresh food. It had green space. It had a university that helped to educate the population, et cetera. So it was supposed to be a very good, progressive place to live.
Supposed to be, you said.
Well, I have found it to be that, but I think that over the last 2 or 3 years, Madison has had to come to terms with itself in some ways that that it did not expect. Mm-hmm. The pristine kind of atmosphere that everyone believes that Madison has also has underpinnings of systemic racism and systemic injustice, actually just like every place else in the United States, because the United States itself its DNA is systemic racism and systemic injustice. And so even places like Madison have those things, and if they're not dealt with intentionally, will continue to have those kinds of things.
Well, there is a kind of popular conversation in Madison about being very liberal,
yes,
being progressive.
Yes, yes, yes. That is a popular a term for Madison. Being progressive and liberal, of course, has its advantages. But if you don't constantly examine what you mean by saying you're progressive, examine what you mean by saying that you're liberal, examining the cultural underpinnings that can still feed into racism and systemic injustice and white privilege, those things have to be examined in a more holistic way.
Yeah, I think you use the term white privilege, which is the basis of a study that we're actually doing in the church where I'm serving, the First mm-hmm. United Methodist Church. And while there may be some squabble about the word privilege, mm-hmm. in a sense, there's no confusion over what it means.
Correct. Well, generally speaking, but I would say that not everybody really has a grasp of it, I would say.
Well, and it's basically those of us who are white who are the last ones to learn.
Seems
because
so.
once you've got privilege, you've got privilege, mm-hmm. and you don't even know where it's coming from. Mm-hmm.
And you're very reluctant to give it up, whether you really realize that you have it or not.
Yeah. Well, we learn how to talk about giving it up without giving it up. White privilege is not unlike other privileges. It has to do with not just prejudice, but having the power to enforce those prejudices.
Absolutely.
I would assume everyone's prejudiced. Not everyone has the power to live them out.
Absolutely.
So you're good listening point. To the Mitch Henk Show. We're here with Pastor Stephen Marsh. Call in 210-1667. We're going to get into some specific issues in Madison as it must come to terms with itself.
Welcome back to the Mitch Henk Show. Mitch seeks the truth by inviting all sides of the issue. Thanks for listening to the Mitch Henk Show.
This is the Mitch Henk Show. I'm Phil Blackwell sitting in for Mitch today as he's with his parents down in Lafayette, Indiana. He'll be back tomorrow. In this hour, we're talking with Pastor Stephen Marsh from the Lake Edge Lutheran Church in ELCA Church, for those of us who know what that means. And we're talking about race in Madison. He's one of two pastors at a multiracial congregation, though primarily white congregation on the east side of town. And Stephen, you had said that over the last few years, it's been a time for Madison to come to terms with itself. We have an anniversary coming up on the city calendar on March 6th. It's the first anniversary of the killing of Tony Robinson. What do we know now, a year later, that we didn't know a year and a week ago before the killing?
I think one of the things that we know, Phil, is that Madison is not very different than a lot of other places that we see and hear about in the news in terms of the situation, the racial situations, the racial injustices, the racial tensions that that are a part of the makeup of Madison and Dane County. We look at TV, and in a place like Madison, we can say, well, we're glad that nothing like that will ever happen here. But last March 6th, we saw that Madison is not different in that regard. We saw that the same tensions exist between the police and people of color in many neighborhoods, like it does in many other places. We saw that the racial injustices that can come to the fore, and the situations of Black people and people of color historically in a place like Madison, though a lot of it is hidden because in Madison, maybe 6% of the population is African American. But there are great disparities between the white population in Madison and the Black population in Madison in particular, and the populations of color in Madison in general. 2 years ago in 2013, with the Wisconsin Council on Children and Families, when they put out the report on called Race to Equity, I think that anyone who was paying attention in Madison was shocked that by the kinds of disparities that we have here in Dane County. Three quarters of our African American children living in poverty. That's higher than the national average. That's higher than any other state. 50% of African American high school students not graduating in 4 years. If that was the case in the white community in Madison, heaven and earth would be moved to change the education system so that a higher percentage of white students could graduate, but it just seems to be the norm in Madison, and there have been some weak attempts to change it. There have been some blocking in terms of things that could happen to change it. But the fact of the matter is that it's still the same. The housing disparities and the employment disparities and the incarceration disparities here in Dane County, some of the highest in the nation. And so I think what we've learned is that having a pristine reputation is not all that it's cracked up to be. Mm-hmm. That underneath the reputation are some systemic things that are in the DNA of this country, that if they are not moved out intentionally or dealt with intentionally, they will remain, and Madison will continue to be just like every place else.
We're talking about some of the racial disparities in town. And we encourage those of you listening to call in 210-1667. Share your stories, your opinions, your alternate views on all of this. I think the report you're talking about, when they talked about the educational achievement gap, that was one of the easiest to understand, not to explain, but to say, okay, here are the kids, and that the Black students in the public system fall farther behind the longer they stay in school. Mm-hmm. And I know that they're talking about that at the public school system, and mm-hmm. we're talking about it at the church where I am, mm-hmm. And we'll be working with some of the tutoring programs coming up. But there has to be some other angle of approach than what has been happening now. And I don't know what it is, but I think it's maybe up to you and me and others to keep bringing it up, to make mm-hmm. it, to have it not lost mm-hmm. in the mm-hmm. in sort of the smoke mm-hmm. of daily life, which mm-hmm. goes on very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Well, Phil, I'm not a professional educator in terms of the public school system, but I do believe that the way that teaching is taught to people of color and in places of color, the resources are not applied like they are applied in the white community. Mm-hmm. The relationships that need to be built between teacher and student are not built, because we're operating with this historical division, this DNA division that we seem to have, where even white teachers don't see Black students as fully human. Mm-hmm. And so they don't give Many of them don't give the same kinds of attention, the same kinds of resources. Many African-American students are left behind because they're not dealt with on a one-to-one basis like education needs to happen. I think we need to look at the whole way that we educate people in this country, first of all. And second of all, we need to look at the ways that our racism as a country has caused the differences in the ways that white students and black students are educated.
Yeah, I know there's some very good teaching going on in the schools across racial boundaries. But I think there's a statistic talking about more than half of the students in the Madison Public Schools are people of color. And about 90% of the teachers are white. Mm-hmm. That simply would suggest to me that they probably should go down to Chicago, where they're going to be laying off teachers anyway, and seeing who they can bring mm-hmm. to this green and pleasant land mm-hmm. that you've discovered. Mm-hmm. That in itself is not the answer.
No, but certainly one of the issues is if an African-American student does not see a teacher that looks like them, mm-hmm. then the interest in education is going to be complicated. There need to be more teachers of color here in this system. I'm appalled at the lack of numbers of teachers of color here. And I would also hope that the University of Wisconsin School of Education of UW mm-hmm. could get involved in some more creative ways. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that teaching is something that needs to be looked at much more holistically, mm-hmm. Particularly when it comes to students of color.
One of the aspects of the public school system, again, in the report showing a racial disparity, is the frequency of suspensions and how black students are much more often suspended from school. Mm-hmm. We had the story a few weeks ago about the young student in a grade school who brought, I think it was a BB gun to school or mm-hmm. something, and was suspended. And then because there was a no leniency mm-hmm. law. And then in that discussion, they're trying to figure out how to take care of not hurting the kid that much. But there is a whole progression from suspension from classroom to incarceration that people can chart. We're going to be back in a few minutes. Again, the number 210-1667. This is the Mitch Henk Show.
Welcome to the Mitch Henk Show, originating for blacks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on the Mitch Henk Show.
This is Phil Blackwell sitting in for Mitch today, who's with his parents down in Lafayette, Indiana. And we're talking with Pastor Stephen Marsh of the Lake Edge Lutheran Church, and we're talking about race in Madison and the many ways in which it shows up in the educational process, housing, jobs, incarceration. In a moment, I'm going to ask Stephen what his church is doing, but I have to come out with my own identity at this point and just say I'm the interim lead pastor at the First United Methodist Church in downtown Madison, and we're having Wednesday night discussions during the season of Lent entitled Of One Blood, Conversations on Race, and this Wednesday we're having Frank Humphrey, who is the leader of the NAACP in Wisconsin, and also the Reverend David Hart. And we're mainly talking about white privilege because it's an almost an entirely white congregation, and so it's sort of a call to accountability. So we're talking about a call coming in from Tim. Okay, before we get going again, Stephen, let's hear what Tim has to say. Tim.
I wanted to just say thanks for bringing this up to people's attention again. Okay. It is a very difficult challenge, and I think Stephen's right that taking a holistic approach is mm-hmm. important. We have many good teachers and some good programs in Madison. Avid Tops is really good. But for me, one of the keys is finding a trajectory for the individual student to reach their academic potential. And so much of that challenge lies in getting to know the individual. Mm-hmm. And for me, I've worked a bit in schools in the area, worked with university training teachers, and worked with Avid Thompson and different exceptional programs in Madison. That's you know, if you can get to know the individual student and learn about them, and a lot of times there are big defensive barriers to that as well. Students who have repeatedly experienced something that makes them feel unaccepted and unsuccessful and not welcome within certain classes or certain activities. Getting past those defenses and finding a way to get to know that person is just really difficult, but really important. That individual, how can they find their pathway to academic success? Mm-hmm. What do you, you know, mm-hmm. what are some of the things that you've seen about that?
Mm-hmm. Well, Tim, I certainly want to applaud what you said, because teaching certainly is a difficult profession, and I want to take my hat off to anyone who is in the teaching profession. I know that there are difficulties in terms of the number of students that teachers have, et cetera, and building the kinds of relationships that are needed, the kind of proximity, getting to know the backgrounds, et cetera, can be very difficult. And so I don't know what all the answers are, but I think that you have set a good paradigm in terms of the building of relationships between between student and teacher, teacher and student, really has to be a number one priority.
When I worked as a teaching assistant and teaching methods, you know, a person that in grad school at the university, one of the assignments I gave to my student teachers was very controversial. And sometimes it went well and sometimes it went poorly. Mm-hmm. But the assignment was for them to choose a student in their class that they didn't like. Mm-hmm. And everybody has students they don't like or find very hard to sympathize or empathize with. And the assignment was to visit them where they live, in their home.
Mm.
And that is, there are issues of privacy. Mm. There are issues of all kinds, you know. So they had to ask permission. They had
Certainly.
To get consent.
Mm-hmm.
But there was, usually it, I think it worked out pretty well. At least that's what they told me in their mm-hmm. report. But I think, I know that I got backlash sometimes even from teachers in the school that was outside the bounds of what's proper.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that
what do you think about that
I
one?
I think you have to go outside of the bounds of what's proper. We've seen that staying inside of the bounds of what we have labeled as proper is really not doing the job. So the places where we see that are having the best results in teaching are the places where teachers are going outside the box. They are taking risks. They are doing some unconventional things to help develop the relationship that are needed, to help to find out what the background is. And so, you know, going to someone's home to find out, you know, just what their environment is, certainly is an out of the box but very effective way of doing some different kinds of things.
The other thing, if I could, mm-hmm. you touched on zero tolerance. And, you know, this is a big change in Madison schools over the last couple of years, from this policy of zero tolerance and very strict rules. You do this. You mentioned earlier a student who brought a BB gun mm-hmm. in, of course, was suspended immediately. So I do talk with teachers in Madison. I know the transition has been very difficult, but I feel strongly that this is a good thing. One sermon I heard in church one time was on the theme of, what if we did actually get what we deserve? What if we always got what we deserved? And I ask people out there, we've all been students, and we've been teachers in different ways. But if you think back to when, you know, you were in middle school or you were in high school, and some of the things you did, what would happen in a world of absolute zero tolerance? And to me, that's one of the big, in different ways, students of color, students who are disenfranchised, are poor, get caught up in a context of zero tolerance. So I applaud Madison Schools for working to make this transition. I know it's difficult, but I think it's really important.
And Tim, thank you so much for giving us sort of an authentic report from the front on what we're talking about, and we hope you keep working with those students and with the teachers. Thank you very much. We were talking earlier, Stephen, about where can safe conversations happen about this? You're new to Madison. I'm sort of a voyeur when it comes to Madison. I went to the Madison Downtown Business Association meeting Thursday morning, and there were maybe 250 people there. It was a very good meeting. There was one black person out of the 250. Mm-hmm. You said you've been in that situation as well. Is there any place in Madison where natural overlap of conversation among races, ethnic groups, cultures takes place? I haven't found it.
You make a good point, Phil. I often find myself the only black person or one of the very few black people in a gathering in Madison. Maybe I'm just not hanging out at the right places. but I think that one of the places that these conversations can take place is within faith communities, as faith communities come together. And I know that the church is just as segregated as every place else, which is why there are different faith communities, black churches, white churches, for example, that need to come together. At the church that I pastor, Lake Edge Lutheran Church, I'm a co-pastor with Pastor Katya Ushakoff. We received a $20,000 grant from the Madison Community Foundation to intentionally build relationships with Christ the Solid Rock Baptist Church, which is pastored by Pastor Everett Mitchell. Now, we had been doing that over the past couple of years anyway. We had been doing that intentionally on our own because Race to Equity report came out, et cetera. Everett and I got together and decided, as me as the pastor of a white congregation, he as the pastor of a black congregation, we just need to get our congregations together in proximity so that we can have some different kinds of conversations. Mm-hmm. So now that effort has been rewarded with a grant. So now we've got some funds to do some things like that. We're going to have a joint vacation Bible school this summer with Christ the Solid Rock. There's a joint women's retreat being planned between the two congregations and a joint men's retreat being planned. Lake Edge has an annual jazz concert, and that's going to, some funds are going to be used to bring more African-American people into that venue, and the ideas continue to come. I believe that the faith community, if it isn't, it needs to be a safer place for some of these interracial conversations to happen. Christians, people of all faiths, Muslims, Jewish people, we all need to be leading the way in terms of trying to bridge these racial and cultural gaps here in Madison.
Okay, we're going to take a break. We'll be back to what else is possible in Madison after this commercial.
Welcome back to the Mitch Hanks Show. Mitch seeks the truth by inviting all sides of the issue. Thanks for listening to the Mitch Hanks Show.
Hey, this is Phil Blackwell sitting in for Mitch Hank today. He will be back tomorrow. Our guest is Pastor Stephen Marsh at the Lake Edge Lutheran Church. And Stephen, you were sharing with us a special project that you have going. And I'd mentioned earlier the church where I'm working, the First United Methodist Church, has a Lenten study called Of One Blood, mm-hmm. with the understanding that that's scriptural, mm-hmm. that all races are of one blood. In fact, race is not a genetic category, but a social construct.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So here we are in Madison, somewhat of a diverse city because of the university in large part. And we're talking about black and white issues, which are at the front of the line of issues, but also Latino and Asian and Asian American, South American, Native American. Mm-hmm. We've got a broad range of conversation partners if we ever wanted to sit down and talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you see those conversations happening, since they're not seeming to happen in public government? They're certainly not happening at the state capitol with the legislators. And you know, we can confess it's not happening in the religious community mm-hmm. with any kind of intentionality. But the only thing stopping us, I think, is we haven't intended to do it. But
mm-hmm.
Where are some of the organizations that might help feed into this?
Mm-hmm. Well, as well as being the co-pastor of Lake Edge Lutheran Church, I am also the chairman of the board of Madison Area Urban Ministry. And Madison Area Urban Ministry is a very effective social justice organization that seeks to bring lots of people together around social justice issues, particularly around the issue of people returning to the community from incarceration. The Madison Area Urban Ministry is an organization that needs faith communities, churches, synagogues, mosques, et cetera, to come together and to help support it. They need the progressive people within those organizations to come together and to help support those issues also. Another organization that I'm involved with is Wisconsin Faith Voices for Justice, which is one of the only organizations that I know that is not just ecumenical, but it is an interfaith organization that is seeking to hold up the issues of social justice, particularly around poverty and unemployment and medical issues, et cetera. This is an organization also that is supported by churches, mosques, synagogues, different faith communities. And so faith communities don't have to reinvent the wheel. They can come to organizations like this and end up in multiracial groups. They can end up in social justice conversations. They can end up doing projects with other people who are of like mind, who are seeking to do the same thing. So mm-hmm. I think that there are organizations and groups that need to come together, because not one group, not one race, not one group of people is going to be able to do this. We all have to do this together. This is a problem of our human community here in Madison and in Dane County. And unless we come together as a human community, we're not going to be able to solve these issues.
The religious communities actually might be able to help the university develop a way to talk about it too, because that's a spotlight on mm-hmm. universities around the country mm-hmm. these days around
mm-hmm.
these issues.
Mm-hmm.
I have a young friend who is a playwright in Chicago. He grew up in Chicago, went to Georgetown University and the University of Chicago, and he has a play opening up next month on called Mosque Alert, about the building of a mosque in a suburb of Chicago. And Jamil refers to himself as a WASP, not a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, but a white Arab Slovak Pole. That's who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And
things
are much more complex than they used to be.
Most definitely. Most definitely. Things are not literally black and white, but we cannot forget the history of black-white relationships in this country, how black people have always been seen to be inferior. We did not come over here through the regular immigration process, like some of the textbooks that are coming out now are trying to portray. And so there is a different way that African Americans are looked at here in this country, even by people who come from other countries, mm-hmm. because of the ways that they are indoctrinated. So that cannot be forgotten. And unless we deal with that head on, unless we deal with the racist history of this country, the systemic injustices that are still going on that have to do with African Americans in particular, then we're going going to keep butting our heads up against the same wall. 50, 60 years ago, our we were talking about the same thing. Our parents were fighting for the same thing. Now, 50 years later, we have to tell our children, well, hopefully 50 years from now, we're not going to be fighting for the same thing. We have to hit some issues head on. And our country's racist history and the systemic injustice are some things that have to be hit head on.
Okay, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in a few minutes for about a minute more. This is the Mitch Henk Show.
You're listening to The Mitch Henk Show. Once again, here's the voice of uncommon sense, Mitch Henk.
Okay, this is Phil Blackwell sitting in for Mitch Henk today, and we have a minute left with our guest, Stephen Marsh. If you've missed part of the discussion and wanted to check in at www.mitchhenk.com, you'll get a podcast of today's show and hear everything that went before this final minute. What do you have to say to us?
Well, I just want to close with something that I heard my good friend and colleague, Reverend Everett Mitchell, say just the other day. He quoted Martin Luther King when he said, "Nothing will be done until people of goodwill put their bodies in the struggle." Which means that if we really want to change things, then we have to invest in solutions that are going to promote the possibility of human transformation. And those solutions come face to face. Those solutions come being in proximity with each other. Those solutions come with having an ability to be honest about some of the things that have been standing in our way and will continue to stand in our way, like systemic oppression, like white privilege, etc. And so we have to be willing to put our bodies, our minds, our souls, our ideologies, our very selves into the midst of this struggle. And we have to be willing to be deconstructed and reconstructed again, individually and collectively, if anything is going to come that's going to be different.
You know, it's interesting to hear the talk about race. It's Super Tuesday tomorrow.
Yeah.
And who's playing that race card and how well are they playing it? It's a whole different vocabulary when you get people running for office and they're having that kind of discussion.
Most definitely. And I'm hoping that most people are not fooled by this rhetoric. This is not the way that we want to go forward.
Anything coming out of the Tony Robinson anniversary you know of?
I would imagine that Young, Gifted, and Black and Black Lives Matter are going to be doing some things. I have not kept up, but I hope to catch up.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, there's a conversation that will emerge in the public domain around that. Mm-hmm. There's certainly a lot around the specific event itself.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for what Stephen's brought up and for what the rest of us have been hearing, there's a much broader conversation that we can generate in good faith.
Yes.
Stephen Marsh from the Lake Edge Lutheran Church, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Phil. I appreciate you having me.
We'll be back after the hour with discussions on the Day Without Latinos.